You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
There's the rush, and this is easy for Luke Tasker. Touchdown, Hamilton. Sends out three receivers to his left, and will hand it off. No, he won't. It's fumbled. Fumble football. And the Cats have it. Adrian Tracy.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, before we get into all the great things that happened on Sunday, what is it with us and relatives of Red Blacks players? What was it, 2-3 years ago, maybe even 4 years ago now, you had a bit of a row with Trevor Harris's brother over something. What was that about again?
Well, I believe there was a story leaked that Trevor Harris wanted to be the highest paid quarterback. And if you're the highest paid quarterback, you're the highest paid player. He wanted to be the highest paid player in the league. And I thought that he did not deserve that yet. And somehow, I believe it was his brother, saw my tweet and started going after me. So yeah, we seem to run into relatives quite a bit when we talk about players.
Yeah. So I think everyone who listens to this is aware of what I wrote about the CFL's response to Anthony Chiaffi's hit on Luke Tasker about a month ago. I'm kind of sick of the story myself now, to be honest, but I guess it hit his family's radar because I kept getting chirped by, I don't know, a relative of his. They have the same last name. I'm going to assume a brother. Maybe it's a cousin. I don't know. Just to steal your thing, dude, bozo behavior. Like, defending this hit and all the stuff around it, and it's like, I get that he's your relative and you got to stand by him, whatever. Why are you going after some dude in Canada who, like, it just seems so silly to me. I feel like if I was the relative of some athlete playing a sport, I feel like I wouldn't be bothered with going, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems so silly. Like, don't you have something better to do with your time? Like I write about the CFL. That's one of my jobs. So this is something I'm paid to do. I don't know. It just feels like really odd to me. Like the Trevor Harris brother thing with you, I kind of get. Like, he's defending his brother. And even that, though, I still think is kind of silly. Like, just let it go. And this seems like the same thing. It's like, what are you doing? Like, this is how
little time you have. He said that Tasker didn't go over the middle anymore after that hit, or
yeah, no receivers went over the middle. It was like he made a statement, and then I don't know. It was nonsense bozo behavior. I called him a slapdick because that's my gimmick. I call people slapdicks. Someone else chimed in and was like, "Oh, he's a slapdick." Well, does a slapdick mean he's a hard-working, nice young man? And it's like, what? Like, no, that's not what it means. But also, thank you for describing every professional athlete on the planet who is, by the people that cover them or the people that know them, nice, hardworking, you know what I mean? Like, you didn't specify anything specific about this one person. It's just so nuts. So to kick off this week, to get pretty much the only negative we're going to talk about this week out of here, whoever this Chiaffi fellow was, you're our bozo of the week. Just ridiculous.
Handed it to Bozo early in the episode. I like it.
Got to do it. Got to get it out of the way because, Mike, let's talk about this game. Sunday was a very good day to be a Hamilton Tiger Cat and to be a fan of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Our boys in black and gold whooped the BC Lions 48-8 in the East semifinal. Mike, I can't think of in all the years that I've been following Ticats, I cannot think of a more lopsided, dominant Ticats playoff victory. Is there any others that stand out to you that can even come close to a 40-point win in a playoff game?
No, not at all. All the playoff games I can remember have been pretty damn close. You know, usually when you're watching Ticats football in the playoffs, it's a nail biter. You think back in recent memory, to some of the Ottawa games. You had that great Montreal East semifinal game. You had the Toronto Eastern final game where we got to the Grey Cup, which was a great game. So I to be honest, I can't even think of a regular season game that was that dominant by a Ticats team.
Like the only games that came to my mind is the 2014 East Final. They beat Montreal. I want to say it was like 48-24, 42-24. Like they beat them by a fairly significant margin, but never felt like it was like a blowout. That's obviously the game where
Right.
Brandon Banks became a superstar. The 99 Grey Cup, they kind of won fairly. Like they got up early. Like they didn't win by a ton, but they got up early and it was pretty much like a no doubter. But this is something completely different. Like this game was, like this was over by what, 20 minutes, 15, like maybe just after the first quarter. Like the Ticats dominated this game from essentially the coin toss on. They get the ball to open the game. They drive for a TD. Then on BC's first play after that, Adrian Tracy forces a fumble and then recovers it. The Ticats then take the ball and score on their next drive. BC misses a field goal. Frankie Williams returns that out of the end zone on what I thought was a pretty decent return, which was like one of those ones where you're like, oh, why is he taking it out? And it's like, oh, he got to the 30, not bad. Doesn't give up the point, and he gets to 30. Then the Cats drive down the field and score another TD. They're up 21 nothing, and it was before you could even blink. Like, it was over. Like, BC, like, they put some drives together late in the game and at certain points in the game, but it seemed that every time they got close, Hamilton's defense would just shut them down. Like, this was such a dominant game that the entire fourth quarter, Mike, I think we could classify as garbage time. Like, Mazzoli came out of the game in the fourth quarter. Like, he didn't play at all in the fourth quarter of a playoff game. Like, this was just a complete and utter dismantling of the BC Lions.
Yeah, it was men against boys out there. It looked that way anyways. I mean, first three possessions, three touchdowns. Yeah, the late in the half, the beautiful touchdown by Luke Tasker where he spins into the end zone. The defense was great. I mean, the offense was never a threat from the BC Lions. Travis Lule, you thought that he was back on track. Maybe he's going to have a big performance in a playoff game. He's had so many injuries and this is his chance, but they just dismantled the BC Lions offense. The defense had pressure all game long. It was just really impressive to watch. The linebackers, the defensive line, the secondary, it was incredible.
We mentioned Lule. He was 8 for 17 for 103 yards. That's 47.1 completion percentage, and his quarterback rating was 42. 42. This is what, the third or fourth time this year that a Ticats defense has made a starting quarterback throw under 50%. You're going to win a lot of games there. You look at the run game for the Lions. They had what, 9, 10 total rushes in this game. Now, obviously, they were down, so you don't run the football, but what were some of the things we were worried about in this game coming in? Would Lule be like vintage Lule? He'd been a Ticats killer before. This was probably the worst game he had ever played against the Ticats. We were worried about Terrell Sutton. He ends the game 6 carries for 24 yards with a long of 7. Like, I'll take that every day. Sean Lemon, Odell Willis, Devon Coleman, complete non-factors. Coleman, I think, had a sack. But if you look at the stat sheet, you won't see Odell Willis's name and you won't see Sean Lemon's name. Actually, I take that back. You will see Odell Willis's name when it comes to kickoffs, because he had a kickoff after Ty Long got hurt after the Ticats tried to block a punt. But it's like, you look up and down, and you look at the guys that you're expected to step up. Brian Burnham, 4 catches for 35 yards. Devere Posey, whose name I don't even remember being called in the game, 2 catches for 46 yards. Like, you just kind of look up and down the stat sheet for the Lions, and you're like, yeah, no wonder they won by 40. Like, the defense just completely shut them down.
Yeah, I believe they had four sacks in the game, and a couple from the inside with Big Teddy getting one, Whitlock getting one, Donnie Namba had a sack, obviously a linebacker. I felt like in this game they brought the blitz a lot more than they usually do. What did you think? Did you see that in this
Yeah,
game?
it definitely felt like they brought a lot of pressure and really trusted their secondary to hold man-to-man coverage. I do want to touch on the Whitlock sack. What do you think of the touchdown? What do you think of the sack celebration where he
Man,
pinned his teammate? That was awesome.
that was incredible. Probably one of the best sack celebrations I've seen in quite some time. Obviously a little shout out to Ric Flair. Even though he didn't usually win matches like that, it was usually the figure four, but it's still a nice tribute.
Yeah, there was a lot of cool Flair things in this one. You saw, I think it was Sean Thomas Erlington, after he scored his touchdown, did the strut, and Flair being there, which is not something I don't think we have to go too into, was really cool. Like, they really incorporated him into the game. He came out first thing, did the whole, got everyone riled up, was classic Ric Flair. He still does not know that it's Oscar Wee Wee. Kept saying Oscar Wee Wee, which was hilarious to me. But you know what? He was out there. He was having a good time. They put videos of Flair up on the board. They showed clips from old promos. It wasn't just we're bringing Ric Flair in and he's going to come out, he's going to wave, and that's it. They really used Flair in this one. And as I think everyone who listens to the show knows, longtime wrestling fan, was really super cool to have the Nature Boy in there, and then to see all the guys. Like, at the end of the game, do you see Simone with the old world title? Like, just super cool. It's like my two favorite things colliding. I'm so glad that they won this, because this would be a lot less fun to do, talking about all the cool stuff they did at the game if the Ticats had lost. So it's like, knowing they went out there and whooped the Lions, like, we could talk about the fun stuff.
Exactly. I mean, he gave a pregame speech before the game in the locker room. He was at center field right before the game when they break it down. I mean, the guy was doing his best to motivate the team, and you're not, oh, let's just say it. It was all Ric Flair. It was all Ric Flair. I mean, that's the reason they won, right?
It was funny because I don't know if he did it in the pregame video, because I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. But when he's cutting the promo to the crowd, getting the crowd hyped up, he pointed to the logo and goes, "I know they danced on this. They ain't coming anywhere near it today. This ain't their logo. This is your logo." So clearly, they must have given him some pointers, like, "This is what happened the last time we played," and just classic Flair, just being the Nature Boy, man. It was really cool to see.
It was, so he's, and everyone knows Ric Flair. Like, all the players know Ric Flair. He's a legend. Everyone knows the woo. So yeah, I'm sure the players were thrilled to have him in the locker room.
Yeah, lots of woos in the game too. Let's talk about our likes and dislikes from this one, Mike. And you want to start with the big boys up front. You touched on it a little earlier with the defensive line, but you want to talk about both sides of the line, because the Ticats dominated the trenches, did they not?
Yeah, I thought they had a great game. The offensive line really kept Jeremiah Mazzoli clean most of the time, pretty damn close to all the time. They were amazing against a front four that can really do some damage. You got Coleman, you got Willis, you got Lemon. Those guys are all-star caliber defensive linemen, and Mazzoli seemed to have a lot of time back there. I was, with all those injuries to the receivers, if the offensive line can play like this in the next game, we will have a serious shot, because if you give the time, if the receivers have the time to get open, I believe they we have the talent to make it happen. So big thumbs up to the offensive line.
And not only did they keep Mazzoli clean, look at the run game. Like, they really set up the run game. And I know you look at the stats and you go, okay, Alex Green, 3.6 yards per carry. All right, that's not that great. I think the team as a whole had like a 4.8 yards per carry. Okay, that's not, you want that to be 5, 5.5, 6. But they ran the ball 24 times in this game. They kept running the football. Green busted off a couple big runs. They used Green in the passing game a little bit. Like, the offensive line and how well they played allowed this team to constantly focus on the run. And man, like, I just don't know what else. Like, this is not something we're used to seeing as Ticat fans over the last few years. But I hate to sound like a broken record, because we've been saying this about the June Jones era. They're just running the football at will again, and it really opens up the whole offense.
And with, Alex Green had a screen pass early in the game. I thought the offensive line did a tremendous job of blocking downfield for him. They had a fake hitch pass or hitch screen, and then they went back to the running back screen one play, and it worked tremendously as well. I love that play. Now, I'm not sure if it was I believe it was an option. Mazzoli reads where the defense goes, the hitch screen wasn't there, so they went back to the running back screen, and it worked tremendously. You know, we have a couple of really athletic offensive linemen who can get off the ball and really block downfield. So I thought he did a great job with the screen passes.
Well, and there was this one time, I can't remember at what point in the game, I think it was early on, maybe first or second quarter, they ran a play, Green picked up like 15 yards, it got called back on a hold, and literally looked like they ran the exact same play the next time. The hold's not there, and he busted again for like 15, 16 yards. Like, the idea that they could run the same play on back-to-back plays, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe it wasn't the same play, but it sure as heck looked like it was. That's nuts to me, man. Like, that's, again, the offensive line going out there and bullying what is maybe the best defensive line in the CFL, made him a complete non-factor, and that was great. What about the D-line, though, Mike? We got to talk about that, don't we?
Oh, we do. But a quick shout-out to Kevin Palmer, an offensive lineman.
Oh, score the touchdown.
Recovering that ball in the end zone for the first touchdown of the game for the Tiger Cats. It's not often that the offensive lineman gets a touchdown, so big shout-out to Kevin Palmer for being on his toes.
Yeah, I can't imagine that anyone had him in the who's going to score the first touchdown of the game pool.
Right.
There's no way.
Yeah.
He probably would have
exactly.
been – he might literally have been, if you put a group of guys together, group of 50 guys or 45 guys or whatever – and said you have to pick one player on each team to score a touchdown, but no one could pick the same two players. He might have been the last – like, you might have been going, oh, man, I got to pick an offensive lineman. Like, all right, well, I guess I got to take the last one, and that's Palmer. And he would have ended up winning. It would have been hilarious. But, yeah, I love fat guy touchdowns. It wasn't, you know, your typical, like, rumble or, like, the catch, but big guy touchdowns, big thumbs up for me.
Yeah. Now, the defensive line was amazing this game. I mean, Big Teddy is on a hot streak right now. He's just – it seems like he cannot be blocked. He had a quarterback sack, two defensive tackles. Whitlock had a sack and a tackle. You know, who else was in on it? Jason Neal had a sack. I thought they really moved that offensive line incredibly. They really, you know, they threw their weight around, to be honest. It's nice to see because, you know, we've been talking about it all year that the defensive line hasn't been up to par. You know, they have a ton of talent there. They lost a couple guys on the defensive line, but I think we're hitting the stride at the right moment because, you know, Lule was under pressure this whole game, and when Jonathan Jennings came in, it was the exact same thing.
Yeah, and like people might look at Jennings's numbers and go, oh, you know what, he came in relief duty and played pretty well, but it was, I think it was 44-0 by the time, or 37-0, I can't remember. By the time Jennings got in there, like, the game was over. So you kind of take those numbers with a bit of a grain of salt, really. But, you know, you're absolutely right. The defensive line exerted its will, and they're peaking at the right time. Like, I will take every year, if this is what goes on, the defensive line takes a little bit to get settled, but then come playoff time, they're dominant. Like, Ted Laurent is almost single-handedly willing this team defensively to a Grey Cup. And that's not taking away anything from any other, because this whole defense played phenomenally in this game. But Ted Laurent is like out there, it's like he's like a man amongst boys. Like, it's almost unfair for someone to try to block him. He's really turned it on when the games have really started to matter. And when he's on his game, if he's not the best in the game before that, he is when he's playing at this type of level. Like, he's unstoppable when he
yep.
plays like this.
He's a beast in the middle. He's just a big bully on that line. My last like that I'll throw out there is, you know, it's a pretty obvious one, Braylon Addison. We heard a lot of good things leading up to this game. You know, I watched the press conferences, and June Jones was really high on this kid. He said he's like Speedy B, essentially. You know, he's not quite as fast, but he can stretch the field. And did he ever stretch the field in this game? 5 receptions, 124 yards, 24.8 yard average, and a long of 44. We saw it in the first drive of the game, going deep to Braylon Addison, and it just seemed like it didn't stop from there. Even though he only caught 5 passes, all of those passes were pretty much deep balls.
Yeah, the first drive catch to me was a tone setter. They lost a couple yards on first down. I think it was 2nd and 12. Mazzoli sat back there, gunned one in. I think it was a 35, 36-yard completion to Addison. Got that offense rolling, and they never looked back. Honestly, I feel like if he – and he took a hit on that. He came out of the game, actually, if I'm not mistaken. I think the spotter took him out of the game, worrying about a concussion, didn't miss a bunch of time. I think missed the required three plays, went back out, was perfectly fine. But, yeah, I feel like that catch sort of – if he drops that ball, I think we're talking about a very different football game. But he came up huge in this. And, look, I know those Speedy B comparisons are there. I think it's unfair to him to try to say, hey, this guy could replace Brandon Banks. No one can replace Brandon Banks. But Braylon starts with a B. Speedy B. Kid Speedy B. Like, you know, flashing kid flash. Like, I don't want to heap too much on him, but I agree with you, Mike. He was absolutely amazing in this one.
And what do you think about the choice to put him in there and, you know, takes Terrell out of the game?
Surprising. But did you see Jim Jones's post-game press conference where someone asked him that? He said he's better.
He's better.
I mean,
it shocked me that he said that, to be honest. I know June Jones is very upfront kind of guy, but I was surprised he said that.
Well, and at the same time, Addison's been here since September. Sinkfield's been here a little over a month. Like, Addison knows, like, he's a small, fast guy. And I know Sinkfield's fast, but he's not small. He's like 6'1", 6'2". He's actually a pretty tall receiver, especially for a June Jones offense. I mean, you see unsung heroes step up sometimes, and all guys need is an opportunity. Addison played a bit earlier in the season. I think he was the kick returner, punt returner in a game against Toronto. I think it was the post-Labor Day game. He did some returning there. Went back on the practice roster after that. Took to coaching, started to learn, gets an opportunity, and look what it's brought him. Like, sometimes you never know where the next superstar is going to come from. And I'm not saying Braylon Addison is a superstar, don't get me wrong, but I don't know, this is something you can build off of. And, you know, everyone's got to start somewhere, right? Like, you didn't know who Luke Tasker was when the Ticats brought him in. And now look at who Luke Tasker is. Maybe Braylon Addison could be the next great receiver in this Ticats offense.
I'm hoping so. And you got that connection. I know they didn't play together, but Jeremiah Mazzoli, a former Oregon Duck, Braylon Addison, a former Duck as well. I can't remember where I saw it, but he was kind of familiar with the run and shoot from college. So maybe that helps out in him, you know, learning this playbook. Maybe you already had a couple steps ahead on this playbook, and it showed on Sunday because, man, this kid looked good.
Speaking of looking good, you just mentioned him. Let's talk about my likes from this one. Jeremiah Mazzoli was absolutely spectacular in this game. But, Mike, I don't really have to tell you that. Now, do I? He played three quarters, as I said earlier, completed 14 of 19 passes for 259 yards, three touchdowns, and a 158.3 passer rating, which for all you people out there, for some reason, that is a perfect passer rating. I don't know why, but that's the number that they finish on. So he literally had the best game possible for a quarterback. The problem I have, the only negative of any of this, Mike, is that none of this is going to quiet the people who simply have a hate on for our quarterback. And I don't get it. He comes out, he plays three quarters of ball, plays, I think he connected on his first 10 passes, throws for three TDs, like, wins a playoff game. Like, what is it going to take for people to just go, even if you don't think he's the best quarterback in the league? And I don't need anyone to think that. But outside of him, like, what, curing every known human disease ever, bringing all our dead relatives back so we can be with them again, and what's he got to do, win 10 Grey Cups, Super Bowls, and what's that? What's that other one? Super Cup? Is that the thing?
Super Cup.
Because you got to win the next 10 of each of those in the next 5 minutes before people will stop crapping on his corn pops. Like, I don't get it. And I think if you look at this, and I bring this up because you and I get tweeted incessantly about how we make excuses for Mazzoli when he plays poorly. It's everyone else's fault and never his. And when he plays well, we give him all the praise. I think that's bull dookie. Here's the thing. We praise Mazzoli a lot because he's been good. Like, what are you supposed to do? He had, what, 12 games of over 300 yards passing through 28 touchdowns? Like, he was top four in, like, every major statistical category, and he's the East nominee for MOP. Like,
and he lost all of his receivers.
Which is crazy.
Like, throughout the whole year. So, like, this notion that he's not good enough, he chokes in big games. I mean, I haven't seen him choke in like a playoff game. You know, we lost those two games against Ottawa, yes. But Jeremiah Mazzoli's not the only person on the field. There are other factors that happen in football games. Football is the ultimate team sport. And I know that the quarterback is the most important position, obviously. But, you know, there's other players on the field, too. He can't do it all by himself. The guy won a playoff game in Toronto in 2015. He pretty much led the team to victory against the Red Blacks, minus a dropped interception and a miracle Hail Mary. You know, we would have been in the Grey Cup that year. I just don't understand why there's so much hate for this guy. I know that he was inconsistent early on when he was with the Ticats. Hell, I at one point said that he's not a starting quarterback.
Yep.
But I can change my opinion on what, you know, I'm not that stubborn, okay? I was wrong about him, and I will admit that. So for these people just to be steadfast in their opinion that they, you know, they just, to me, it's just pure, maybe hate is a strong word, but they strongly dislike this guy, and I don't know why.
I think it's stubbornness. I think it's, unlike you, they have an inability to admit they were wrong. People don't like to admit they were wrong, so they got to come up with any reason. Like, it was all, to me, so, oh, well, his numbers aren't great. He throws too many interceptions. Then he cuts down on the interceptions, and it's like, well, he throws for a lot of yards, but they don't win. Then they went on, like, they won, like, 5 of 7. Then it was like, well, they win, but now it's they don't win all the, like, whenever anyone dislikes Jeremiah Mazzoli and talks about him in the negative, it's always something new. It's never, the debate is never the same. It's never, okay, well, his numbers are great. Okay, but he doesn't win games. Then he wins games. Oh, well, he won one game. He only threw for like 145 yards or something. It's like, okay, but they won. Well, then we had nothing. Like, it's a constant moving of the goalpost with this guy. And I get it. I remember those first starts. It took me a very long time to get over the idea of him being the starting quarterback, because I kept having, I think it was a game against the Stamps, and he threw like two awful interceptions, and the Ticats lost like 10-7 in Calgary in a game they could have won. It was the first year Caleros was here, and it was after he'd gotten knocked out by, you know, Mr. He Hate Zach Caleros, Odell Willis, and like Mazzoli was just terrible, like absolutely terrible. And it took me a very long time to be like, I don't know about this guy. Then he has that playoff run in 2015. They beat the Argos in the East Final. He, like you said, he outplays Henry Burris in the East Final in Ottawa. Like, go back and look at the numbers and watch that game. Mazzoli was terrific. Saying he doesn't perform in big games, you're forgetting that one. Then he took over as a starter to start the 2016 season. They were up and down. I think they were 3-3 with him as a starting quarterback. And then he takes over the, like, yeah, maybe he's a 500 quarterback, but you know what? Ricky Ray won a Grey Cup as a 500 quarterback. We watched Henry Burris lead the Red Blacks under 500 to win a Grey Cup. Like, who cares what you do in the regular season if you get to the playoffs, because then anything can happen. And after this game, if you're still after this game criticizing him, I don't know what's wrong with you. Like, he was fantastic in this. And maybe he'll crap the bed against Ottawa. Maybe they'll lose. And everyone can go back to, oh, same old Jeremiah. But to me, he's done enough this season and over the last year and a half since June Jones took over to solidify for me that even if he has a bad game, he's still the best quarterback for this team. I'm not saying – I might not say he's the best quarterback in the league. I think he's in the conversation, but he's definitely the best quarterback for this team. I would not trade him for any other quarterback in the CFL, because I don't think anyone could run this offense as well as Jeremiah Mazzoli does.
Yeah, well said, Josh. And I just – I'm fully behind this guy as well. I think that he's worked – hard to earn the starting position, and yeah, he's the guy going forward. The guy's only 30 years old. There's still tons of time left in his career, and I think the best is still to come. You know, like we mentioned earlier, he lost tons of receivers, and he can't use injuries as an excuse, and obviously he didn't yesterday in the game. So he's finding new chemistry with these new receivers, and we'll see what happens next week.
Indeed. The other thing I want to touch on, my other like from this game, you talked about Braylon Addison, who was an unsung hero on offense. I want to talk about Frankie Williams, because, man, how good was he in this game? He had a couple very nice returns, including one for a TD that was called back for a block in the back that I read Dwayne Ford said was borderline. Mike, I was at the game, so I haven't had a chance to watch it again. What say you? Was the flag deserved? We've been very honest in our assessment of Taylor Reed's flag in the Grey Cup all those years ago, saying it was a flag. That was a block in the back. Whether we think it met with the spirit of the law or is just the, you know, the black and white rule, we had never wavered in saying, man, yeah, he touched him in the back. That's a block in the back. What about this one? Do you think this one was deserved?
Well, I think we've been fair on the show to Jeremiah Mazzoli as well. I think we've called out when he's had poor games, and I think when we, you know, when the offensive line wasn't well, playing well, I think we blame put it on them. But I think we've been fair with Mazzoli, just to throw that out there.
Okay.
On this play, I didn't think it was. They didn't need to throw the flag. I didn't think that it was a clear block in the back. And I thought it should have been a touchdown. It was a hell of a run by him. I mean, the guy has speed for days. I'm glad they put him in the secondary as well. But I think we have a legitimate threat in the return game now.
And he also plays on the cover teams. And he had a beautiful tackle on punt coverage that pinned the Lions deep in their own end. And they would go two and out, and they would concede a safety. And then he had to fill in on defense. Josh Johnson goes down after nearly having an interception, and he gets hurt on that play, doesn't come back in. Williams has to take over, and to top everything off, he has a 40-yard or 35-yard pick six on Travis Lule. Like, great special teams tackle, contributes in the return game, scores a touchdown on defense. What more can you do in a game, man? Williams was phenomenal in this one. Another, I love these guys, these unsung heroes that come out of nowhere in the playoffs, and you're just like Keenan LaFrance a couple years ago with the Red Blacks had like 150 yards rushing in the East Final to get them to the Grey Cup, and it's like, where did that come from? Frankie Williams had one of those games. Braylon Addis had one of those games. I just love when guys you don't expect to come up big.
And those guys have been with this team the whole year,
mm-hmm.
So they know what's going on. I was very impressed with Frankie Williams as well. That pick six was a thing of beauty. You know, he read that route, and he cut right underneath it, and he was gone. I mean, that receiver was not catching him. There's no way, no how. So, yeah, I love the unsung heroes as well because they have to step up. Players have to step up with all these injuries, and they did that in the first game. Now on to the next.
All right, we got to talk dislikes, and these are nitpicky. We're going to admit that off the top. So, Mike, let's talk about some of the things in this game we didn't particularly love.
Oh, I'm going to have to go with the kicker. It is, like you said, a little nitpicky, but he did miss one field goal, even though I felt like the wind really took a hold of that ball and sent it right of the uprights. But if I have to give one dislike, it's going to be the kicker.
Yeah, and you know what? We're going to give him his name back this week because he didn't kick one out of bounds. So, Liram Hirelahu. And
sure.
That's, again, this is a nitpicky. I thought he was actually pretty good in this game, aside from that one missed field goal. His kickoffs were deep. His punts stayed in bounds. I think that's the most important thing. But, yeah, like that missed field goal. It's the one lone blemish, really, on the entire game, right? Like, and it would have been nice if they would have put up a 50-burger. It would have been nice to see.
It would have been really nice.
But you know what? We're going to admit these are nitpicky. Mine's nitpicky too. Penalties. I thought that this team took too many penalties in this one. 9 for 99 yards. It is a nitpick, but I don't like seeing this stuff because in games that are closer, in games against better teams, these types of things, these types of mental mistakes, these types of penalties can hurt you. So in this game, it didn't matter, but we always like to see the penalties, you know, in the 4, 5, 6, not in the 8, 9, 10 range.
And I believe a lot of those penalties were after the game was out of hand.
Yeah, so, they were.
Yeah, but you still don't like to see them.
No, like the pair of pass interference penalties that got BC to the 1 yard line before they go for what was it, third or might have even first? I guess it was first one because it came after a pass interference penalty. First and goal from 1 yard line, and they do a direct snap to the running back, and Simone Lawrence just bowls him over, picks him up. What do you think about that?
I'm surprised you didn't get a penalty there.
Yeah, for loose ball interference. I was kind of too, but you know what? It's whatever. He then rumbles down this like. Did you think he was going to score? Like, I was hoping he would score, but, man, he hits about the 35-yard line, and you can just tell he's got nothing left in the tank.
Yeah, he lost his wind around that point. I thought for sure he was going to score. He had a group of blockers with him, but you know, he was sucking oxygen pretty good after that run.
Yeah, he didn't even come back on the field on defense on the next set of downs. Someone else came in, and I was like, yeah, no, that ain't him. And then you look on the sideline, he's still sucking wind. It was kind of funny. And, you know, again,
it reminded me of a play, which I was a couple years ago. It was the Eskimos and the Tiger Cats in Edmonton. And I think it was James Franklin that fumbled the ball at the 1 yard line.
Yep,
the Tiger Cats brought it all the way back. So it reminded me a little bit of that.
Yeah, that was Eric Norwood, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. Okay, so we're done with our likes. We're done with our dislikes. Last thing from this game, Podsky Player of the Week, our first ever Podsky Player of the Week for a playoff game. Mike, why don't you tell everyone who we're picking this week?
Well, we got to go with the man behind center, Jeremiah Mazzoli. Didn't have huge numbers, per se, but he didn't have to. He started off the game very hot, marching this team down the field. You know, it was 28-0 by halftime, and he had a large part in that 28-0 lead. Our Podsky Player of the Game is Jeremiah Mazzoli. He went 14-19, a 73.7 average. He threw for 259 yards. The most important thing, though, three touchdowns and a long of 44 yards. So our Player of the Week is Mr. Jeremiah Mazzoli. He deserves it.
Yeah, let's hope we get to name him Player of the Week the next 2 weeks. And if that happens, we're a couple of happy chaps sitting freezing our butts off in Edmonton.
Yeah, I can't. I am so nervous for this game on Sunday, but so excited at the same time.
Yeah, indeed. All right, let's talk some Ticats news. Lots of awards and all-star stuff to talk about. Let's talk about the awards. Three Ticats are up for CFL League Awards. Jeremiah Mazzoli is up for Most Outstanding Player. Larry Dean is up for Most Outstanding Defensive Player. Brandon Revenberg is up for Most Outstanding Offensive Lineman. I would also be remiss if I didn't mention that Mike Daly was up for the Jake Goddard Award. Did you see the announcement in there where they talked about like why Daly was nominated? And he went for shoulder surgery in the offseason, and doctors told him it was 50-50 he would ever play again?
I did not see that, no.
Yeah, that's nuts. And then you think, like, not only has he come back to play, but he won the starting safety job in camp, played the entire season, and has become one of like the Ticats like leading Canadians and one of the stalwarts on defense. Like, did you hear this story? It's like, man, what a great season Mike Daly had.
Yeah, he did, and he had a couple of games where he was on the downward slide, but for the most part, I thought Mike Daly has had a really good season. You know, he doesn't have quite the speed that Courtney Stephen would have if he was back at safety, but he lays the boom. Yeah, you know, a little bit of Rob Hitchcock in Mike Daly.
Yeah, Daly reminds me a bit of Hitch, bit of Craig Butler. Like, that's the mm-hmm. type of player I see him as. Not, like, you're right, Stephen has the speed, but Daly likes to lay the wood. Okay, but going back to the other three awards here, I'm going to be honest, I don't think these three guys will win these awards. I think Larry Dean is going up against Adam Big Hill, who I think there's a lot of momentum for him to be the most outstanding defensive player. Mazzoli is going up against Bo Levi Mitchell, and I think despite them having very similar numbers, I think you're going to look at touchdown passes, and you're going to look at the wins, which as much as I hate QB wins as a determiner of quarterback play, it's hard when to look at a team that went 8-10 and a team that went 13-5 and say the quarterback for the 8-10 team was better. I totally understand that. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I understand it. And then Revenberg goes up against Stanley Bryant, who won the award last year. I think that's a tough one. So instead of us debating like who we think will win, I thought it'd be fun to kind of rank these three guys in order of who we think is most likely to win, agreeing sort of that we don't really think that any of these guys will win. But, you know, crazier things have happened. So, Mike, from three down to one, how do you rank these guys on their likelihood of winning?
Well, at number three, I got Larry Dean. I just don't think he's going to beat Big Hill. Big Hill has had a tremendous year coming back to the CFL. He signs with the Bombers, and he's just been that leader on defense. He's been awesome all season long. I love Larry Dean, but I just don't see him winning this award.
Yeah, I got Dean at 3-2, Mike.
Okay.
For all the reasons you said, I just feel like Adam Big Hill took that Bombers defense and made it one of the best in the league, and I feel like He's a former Most Outstanding Defensive Player winner. He's been the difference between that Bombers team going to the West Final and being eliminated in the first round of the play. Like, I look, I like you, love Larry Dean. Actually, a little surprised that Dean even won this. I thought Enoch Bwamba would beat him out. In fact, I was surprised Larry Dean was even the Ty Cats nominee for this award. I thought Delvin Bro and Don Unamba had better cases for it. But yeah, I'd love to see him win. But yeah, he's in my number three slot too. Who do you have at two?
Number two is Jeremiah Mazzoli. Obviously, I think he's had a great year. I just don't think the vote, like you mentioned earlier, I mean, touchdown passes, wins. Bo Levi Mitchell is more of a standout name to everyone. So I just don't see Mazzoli overcoming Bo Levi Mitchell, even though everyone knows I'm not the biggest fan of Bo, but I think Bo's going to take this one.
Yeah, this is one of those years where I kind of wish they didn't do MOP, like the player voting the way they do, because you have it down between these two guys, but there's four or five other guys that you could make a case for to win this award. And it would have been more interesting had all of them kind of been available for that. But that's a nitpick with something that we can talk about in the offseason. This is what we have. I got Mazzoli at two as well for the same reasons you said. There's some momentum behind him. I've seen some people, some voters online talk about why they will vote for Jeremiah Mazzoli. So I think this is going to be a much closer vote than the last time Bo was up for MOP. I think that's the year. I think it was 2016. I think he was up against Ernest Jackson, and I believe he was a unanimous selection. I think this one could be much closer. I think Mazzoli has a shot, but I don't know. Those wins, those touchdown passes, that's going to be tough to overcome. So in boring old fashion, you and I agree on all three because we both have who at number one?
Mr. Revenberg, and I'm going to say that he's going to win this award. The Ticats allow the third fewest sacks in the league this year. Stanley Bryant, I believe, won it last. Did he win it last year?
He did win it last year.
So, Revenberg's a Canadian. We'll see. I think I'm stealing all of your points away from you, but that's okay. I'm a dirty thief.
No, that's
but,
okay.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say Revenberg wins this one.
The reason I have him at one is because he is Canadian, and that's sometimes voters will go, "Wow, we got a Canadian against an American. Let's throw it to the Canadian kid." They sometimes do, like, whether that's right or wrong, they sometimes do that. And maybe Bryant being up for the award a second year in a row could work against him. We saw that with Anthony Calvillo for how many years when he'd be up for MOP, and it's like, okay, we can go to Calvillo, who's, yeah, he had a great season, but wasn't as good as his last year. And I did not know that Ticats allowed the third fewest sacks in the league, and I think that kind of speaks volumes. So, I don't know. I still don't think he's going to win, but he still is my number one choice for most likely to win. And I guess we'll find out the Thursday before Grey Cup in Edmonton how right or wrong we are on all three of these.
I would like to attend the awards, but it's like $7,000 for a ticket. So I think we'll pass on that one, Josh. Unless you want to pay for it, unless you got $14,000 laying around, you want to throw it.
Let's we'll talk after the mics are off.
I might have
something for us. We'll see.
Oh.
If nothing comes of this, you never heard this. Let's talk All Stars. The Ticats had nine players named to the East Division All Star team: quarterback Jeremiah Mazzoli, wide receivers Brandon Banks and Luke Tasker, offensive lineman Brandon Revenberg, defensive lineman Ted Laurent, linebackers Larry Dean and Don Unamba, defensive backs Delvin Bro and Kariel Brooks. Any of these really surprise you? There's one that stood out to me, two in particular, but one, Kariel Brooks, did not expect that. Did not see that coming.
That was the only guy. Brooks, I thought he had a good season. I didn't think it was an all-star season, but he started all 18 games. He had a career high 57 defensive tackles, 7 pass knockdowns, 3 forced fumbles, and 1 tackle for a loss. So he did have some pretty good stats, but he just didn't bounce off the page to me. But everybody else totally, thought they'd be all-stars.
Yeah, maybe it's because we didn't hear about him a bunch that's like why he – like, look, I think if you go look at the all-star team, it is pretty much Red Blacks and Ticats. Because they were the two, like the Argos and Alouettes were garbage. So, like, Unamba surprises me a little bit simply because I didn't feel like until late in the season he was really getting the national recognition he deserved. And as we talked about last week, Derek Taylor from TSN was saying Chip Cox was a better Sam linebacker than Don Unamba. So, I thought maybe there something like that could happen. You know, Chip Cox is the name everyone knows. Don Unamba is not really a household name. He is now, but he wasn't then. But yeah, the Brooks one, maybe it's, you know, we didn't hear from him because he was so good and he was playing that boundary side halfback next to Delvin Bro. Like that battery on that boundary side with Bro and Brooks both got all-star nods. Pretty good 1-2 punch over on the boundary side of the field for the Ticats in the secondary. And you could make an argument for Jamal Roll as an all-star, I think. And Mike Daly could have been in the conversation, I think, too, at safety. But yeah, 9 Ticats named the All-Star team, and you can't really find a quibble with any of them.
No, they all had tremendous seasons. You know, Bro, obviously the stats aren't going to jump out at you because other teams are just afraid to throw his way. You know, Ted LaRon has been coming on really strong at the end of the season. Revenberg's had an incredible career season. Tasker has been steady Eddie for the Tiger Cats. Obviously Banks, maybe he's the MOP nod if he doesn't get injured in the last couple games. So all these guys are standout players and deserve to be all-stars.
The thing about Bro reminded me, I think the Lions had a third down in the last game. It was like 3rd and 10, and John Jennings threw to Bro's side. And I remember the laughing at the stands going, you need to pick up 10, 50, whatever the yardage was. You throw to Delvin Bro? Like, what are you, insane?
He's been the lockdown guy all season long. I'm so glad we got him back for the playoffs because if he's missing out of this defense, you know, that's a big, huge loss for the Ticats.
Yeah, and I personally believe he's a 1-year rental player essentially, and he'll be back in the NFL because he's too good to not be playing in the NFL. But man, oh
No.
man, am I ever glad Ken Austin brought him up here, because it seems like if he ever comes back to the CFL on a permanent basis, he's not going anywhere but Hamilton, and that's awesome. Let's talk about the debate that erupted, and one that I may have, you know, helped nudge along a bit myself. But who should have been the East All-Star QB? Jeremiah Mazzoli was obviously the one that was picked, but a lot of people thought that Trevor Harris was snubbed. Now, Mike, you've been a somewhat vocal Trevor Harris detractor, and we all know that I hate the Ottawa Redblacks because their very existence pisses me off, according to some. What say you on this matter? Should Harris have been the All-Star QB, or was Mazzoli the correct pick?
I'm biased, but I still think that Mazzoli was the correct pick. There might be a few stats that lean Harris's way, and obviously the win column is a huge thing. But I just think the way Mazzoli played all season long, he was pretty damn consistent, minus a couple games here and there. And I thought Trevor Harris was very up and down up until the last, you know, 4 or 5 games of the season. So I still give my nod to Mazzoli, and obviously you have to take into account all the receivers that went down, and he still performed at a very high level. So I can see why Ottawa fans think that Harris should be the guy, but I'm still with Mazzoli.
Yeah, to me, it's not even close, honestly. Harris, I believe, was only better than Mazzoli in completion percentage and interceptions, which are, you know, don't get me wrong, two fairly important ones. But Mazzoli had more yards. He threw fewer passes. His receivers had fewer yak. I think it was something like 400 fewer yards after catch for Hamilton receivers than for Redblacks ones, which tells you that the Redblacks like to throw short passes and let the receivers do work. There's nothing wrong with that, and I'm not judging them. But if you as a quarterback, you're getting most of your yards or more of your yards through the receivers doing the job, it skews that to me towards the receivers. And Brad Sinopoli was the guy that he leaned on and had a phenomenal season. Mazzoli had more touchdown passes. Like, it's just in almost every metric that you can find to judge quarterback play outside of QB wins, which I hate. To me, this is Jeremiah Mazzoli all day, every day.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm gonna lean Mazzoli, you know, no matter what, because we try to be, you know, not too biased on this show, but I just think that Mazzoli had the better overall season, and hopefully he has a better overall game in the Eastern Final.
Okay, don't get too ahead of ourselves here. We still
I'm
got.
sorry, I'm sorry,
That's
I'm
okay.
sorry,
We
I'm
still
sorry.
got that's called a tease. I love it. We still got one more piece of news to talk about. This is CFL wide, And Mike, I know you hate it, but we're talking expansion again for, I believe, the second week in a row.
I don't hate it, Josh. I'm just a negative Nancy on the subject. I'm skeptical, all right?
Yeah.
But go on. Go on.
Okay. So Maritime Football Limited announced a season ticket drive and a name the team contest last Wednesday. You brought up the negative Nancy thing, Mike. So tell us why we're all stupid for getting our hopes up. You know, I know you want to do it. You want to just crap on everything because you hate the idea. You think it's stupid.
No, I don't hate the idea.
Obviously, you don't.
I love the idea.
You're skeptical.
Even my mother was yelling at me last week. She was like, "Are you excited about all the Halifax stuff?" And I said, "Listen, I'm not going to be excited
listen,
until there's."
And then she slaps you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm not going to be excited until the funding is in place from the government. Until we know that the stadium is going to be paid for in this manner, I'm not going to get my hopes up. And she yelled at me, called me a pessimist. You're just like your father. No, I'm just but yeah, hopefully my dad's not listening. Listen, this is as close as we've ever been. Obviously, you know, they're going to announce the team name at the Atlantic Schooners party, which I hope to be at with my friend Josh here.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I just not getting overly excited because I don't want to get my hopes up and then to be let down again. So hopefully this is the first stepping stone, and then soon we will find out whether or not the government is going to chip in for a stadium or how they're going to fund this stadium.
So Mike, I've been Mr. Positivity about this, but I'm going to agree with you on this, and I don't really think this is that big a deal, and I'll tell you why. Does the name Jim Balsillie ring a bell to you?
Yeah, the Hamilton NHL team sold season tickets, did they not?
Yep, we went through this thing here in Hamilton. I don't remember if it was 2007, 2008, 2009, sometime around then. Jim Balsillie was going to bring, I can't remember if it was the Predators or the Coyotes, to Hamilton. They had a season ticket drive. They sold like 15,000 season tickets. Like this was a sure thing. Like the money was there. This was going to happen. There is no NHL team currently playing in Hamilton, and there probably never will be an NHL team playing in Hamilton. So these season ticket drives where, and even in this, you got to put down 50. Like I could put down $50 to
yeah, anybody could really.
Anyone could. And like, don't get me wrong. Like I think this is cool. I agree with you. This is the closest we've ever come. I think this is great that they're going to go out and try to gauge interest in this, and I think they want to build a 24,000 seat stadium. I feel like you got to get 12,000 to 15,000 deposits here to really make you feel like, okay, we've got something here. If they get less than that, I feel like it shows that there's the interest really isn't there. I don't know if we'll ever know that, but I'm kind of with you. Like I love talking about this because I honestly do believe that this is going to happen. I think one day in the not too distant future, we are going to be watching a football game in Halifax between what I hope is the Atlantic Schooners, because I feel like that's got to be the name after all this time, and the Hamilton Tigercats. Like, I do believe that's going to happen. I think this is cool. I think this is fun. But until there's a stadium in place, until there's funding for a stadium, like you said, it's kind of all just window dressing.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now, what do you think the name should be? If
Schooners.
When this
it
happens.
Has to be. Has to be.
Schooners.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a lot of push for Storm, but I'm with the Schooners idea as well.
Now,
yeah, I mean, it's just tradition, I suppose.
Now, our buddy over on the Three Down Nation Greencast, John Fraser, put out the Halifax Fighting Lobsters. And I mean, if we're not going to get Schooners, I want Fighting Lobsters. What about you?
No, I still think Halifax Hellfish is
oh, that would be pretty
is
good.
A tremendous name. But you got the old, even you got the logo from The Simpsons. Remember?
Yes.
The
oh,
Hellfish?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
When
What's
Grandpa
that?
Is
that
old
gibberish?
Platoon or whatever.
Yeah, wrinkly gibberish. Of course I remember.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, you know, I know that they would never name the team Hellfish, but, you know, it has a nice flow to it, right? Halifax Hellfish. Yeah, it works, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they are going to go with the Atlantic name, I think, because they want to brand it regionally, which is fine. I don't know. Fighting Lobsters. I'm with Fraser on that one. Fighting Lobsters. Let's get that trending. It's never going to happen.
No,
but
Hellfish.
I don't know. It's funny. Hellfish. All right, Mike, as we did last week, let's dig in to this weekend's playoff games. And we'll start in the East like we did last week with our Hamilton Tigercats heading to the nation's capital to take on the Ottawa Slapdicks. Sorry, I mean the Ottawa Redblacks. As I'm sure we will hear all week, the Red Blacks swept the Ticats in the regular season, including those back-to-back wins in October that clinched first place for the Red Blacks, which is why this game is being played in Ottawa and not Hamilton. And this is the first playoff meeting between these two teams since that fateful 2015 East Final, which, again, I'm sure we are going to hear about ad nauseum over the next week.
Well, the Red Blacks are already tweeting out the play.
Oh, I know. Did you see Ted Laurent?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he said
like,
bet?
Yeah.
What does that mean? I don't know what that means.
Guys will put out things and they'll say bet, so they'll bet on it. So I guess what he's saying is, oh, you think this is going to happen again? You think you're going to beat us again? Let's bet.
Okay, I like it.
I don't know, man. Bulletin board material. Like, people can say it's silly, but that logo dance and stuff really pumped this team up. Ric Flair, like I said, Ric Flair was using it to hype up the crowd and to hype up the team.
And you could argue that, BC Lions' season went downhill after that happened.
You could.
You know,
they didn't play very well after that.
Anyways.
So this should be a fun one, right? Like, man, I guess, come on, beat the Red Blacks.
Oh, you gotta. You can't lose four times to the same team.
No.
I mean, you gotta. I'm just going to throw out some numbers here,
Josh.
Yeah,
you got some numbers for us. Let's hear them.
I got some numbers. For offense, total points, Hamilton is third in the league with 513. Ottawa is fifth with 464. Passing yards, Hamilton second in the league with 5,592. Ottawa is third with 5,579. Passing TDs, Hamilton's second in the league with 30. Ottawa's fifth in the league with 25. Average possession time, Hamilton's first in the league with 31 minutes and 22 seconds. Ottawa's fifth with 30 minutes and 5 seconds. Rushing yards, Hamilton's third in the league with 1,991. Ottawa is dead last in the league with 1,692. Rushing TDs, Hamilton's fourth with 16, Ottawa's last with 13. Sacks allowed, Hamilton's third with 36, Ottawa's eighth with 43. And turnovers, Hamilton's sixth with 50, and Ottawa is second with 42, which I believe is the only stat that Ottawa wins on the offensive side of the ball. So if you want to go by stats, Hamilton should have the advantage on offense.
You know what I hear here is I hear rushing yards. And the thing, didn't William Powell finish like second in the league in rushing? So outside of Powell, the Red Blacks do not get a lot of production from their running game. So if you shut down Powell, I feel like you can win the ball game. Sacks.
Last in rushing yards, last in rushing TDs. So.
Yeah. Sacks. Sacks is the other one, Mike. You said the Ticats were third in the league in sacks allowed, whereas the Red Blacks were eighth, if I'm not mistaken, is what you said?
Yep.
Tells me if the Ticats front four can get pressure, or if they can break some blitzes like they did against BC, they get those sacks, and the Ticats offensive line can hold off the pressure. Like, those look like the two things that the Ticats have to do in this game is get pressure, avoid pressure, and shut down William Powell, and it could be a pretty darn good game for the Ticats.
Yeah, I'm not sure Trevor Harris is ready yet to take that next step. Now, you can say the same thing about Mazzoli, but I just hope that he gets, flustered early and we see one of those – bad games from Trevor Harris, because he's kind of up and down. I know he's been really good lately, but you never know what you're going to get necessarily from him. So hopefully they can get a lot of pressure on him and mess him up.
Yeah, and people like to talk about QB wins. Jeremiah Mazzoli's won a pair of playoff games and very nearly won a third in the East Final against Ottawa in 2015. Trevor Harris never won one as a starting quarterback. He's only started the one, which was last year's East Semi, and he put up some ridiculous numbers. He threw like 60 passes and had like 438 yards passing or something, but they lost that game. So I think there's a lot more pressure in this one on Harris because the Red Blacks were an 11-win team. They're hosting the East Final. He hasn't had that signature playoff moment. Whereas Mazzoli, 8-10 team. Look, the fans that dislike him in Hamilton are going to dislike him. He could go out and go 20 for 20 for 400 yards and four touchdowns, and they could win this game by 50, and there'll still be people doubting him, so that's not going to change. But I feel like out of the two guys, Mazzoli's a lot more entrenched in him. Like, Harris is a free agent at the end of the season. If he craps the – like, there's a lot of pressure, I think, on Trevor Harris. We're going to find out a lot about him in this one if he can handle that sort of pressure.
And if they can't run the ball effectively, then there's even more pressure on Trevor Harris, right? And we talk about the numbers. I mean, the last in the league with rushing. So William Powell's a very good running back. But if they can't get him going, there might be some trouble for that offense. Now, if you want to jump to the defensive side of the ball with the stats, we can take a look at those as well. I got points allowed. Hamilton, fifth in the league with 456. Ottawa's third with 420. Sacks, Hamilton's eighth with 31 sacks. Ottawa's seventh with 33, really close there. Interceptions, Hamilton's eighth with 14. Ottawa's seventh with 16, also very close. Forced fumbles, Hamilton's fifth with 14. Ottawa's second with 19. Pass knockdowns, Hamilton's fourth with 49. Ottawa's second with 60. So if you're looking at the defensive side of the ball, you have to give the advantage to the Ottawa Redblacks if you're just looking at the stats.
Yeah, it looks like they've had a bit better of a season, especially with turnovers. They've done a better job, I think, of creating turnovers than Hamilton has, and sacks. Sacks has been one of the things that Tykes have done well in the last few weeks, but that was a hindrance for them. So again, it's going to come down to, and I know it's boring to say, who wins the battle inside? The Ticats give up the least amount of sacks, or give up the third least amount of sacks, and they have only accumulated the second least amount of sacks themselves. Mm-hmm. Ottawa's has more sacks, but they give up more sacks. So there's that battle, that trench battle that we talked about this week is going to come into play in this one.
And I feel like the offensive stats are – there's more of a gap in the offensive stats for Hamilton than there is in a gap for the defensive stats for Ottawa. I mean, you know, some of these, you know, Hamilton's eighth in the league in sacks and Ottawa's seventh, and there's only two more sacks for Ottawa. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can make an argument that it could be a wash on the defensive side of the ball. Now, I have the special teams stats as well, if you want some of those, Josh.
They've got to all favor Ottawa. Ottawa has the best kicker in the game right now.
Well, punt average, yeah, you're pretty much right. Punt average, Hamilton's sixth. Ottawa's second. Kicking average, Hamilton's fifth. Or kickoff average, Hamilton's fifth. Ottawa's eighth. Punt return average, Hamilton's fifth. Ottawa's fourth. Kick return average, Hamilton's third. And Ottawa's fourth. Yeah, interesting. So, and we have, you know, we might have found our kick returner, Frankie Williams. So, you know, some of these stats can go out the window, pretty much all of them when it comes to the playoffs. But it's nice to look and to gauge how close they are.
Come on, and we all know that a kicker who kicks 50 straight field goals is going to miss the game winner in the playoff game. Like, it's the Gary Anderson rule. You go
right,
all season without missing a thing, you break records, you're the talk of the town, and then come playoff time, they walk you out there to kick a 44-yard field goal, and it goes wide right, and next thing you know, your team's no longer in the playoffs. So, look, yeah. Lewis Ward's had a tremendous season. Let's see what he could do when the pressure is at – like, there's a lot – honestly, and I'm not saying this because I'm a Ticat fan. If the Lions had won on Sunday, I think I'd be saying the same thing. There is a lot of pressure on Ottawa to win this football game because they are going to be the favorite team, and they should be, based on the records and how these two teams played during the regular season. There's going to be a ton of pressure on them. We're going to know what this game's going to be like with that first quarter. If the Ticats hang with them or, for us, hopefully, roll out to a big lead, it could be a long day for the Redblacks.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. And, you know, you look at that record, and, you know, hats off to him. He did a tremendous job, but a lot of those field goals were from inside the 30. I mean, the offense of the Ottawa Redblacks had stalled and stalled in the red zone time and time again, and Lewis Ward had the chance to just, you know, kick those chip shots. So, yes, it's a tremendous accomplishment, and I believe he kicked like a 52-yarder to actually get the record. But he's not really tested from outside 45. He hasn't been tested a lot from outside 45 this season. So, you know, if he has to make a 50 or 52-yard field goal to win the game, I'm not sure I'd have a ton of confidence in him.
Well, you know what? I will let him kick. He can kick 10 field goals in this game for all he wants, because if the Ticats are giving up field goals but they're scoring touchdowns themselves, they're going to win this football game.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's move over to the West, Mike. We have the Winnipeg Blue Bombers coming off their big win in Saskatchewan in the West Semi, traveling to Calgary to take on the Stampeders. These two teams met twice in the regular season, with each team winning one game apiece. The Bombers come into this game pretty hot. They've won six of their last seven, while Calgary enters having won just once in their last four games, which is atypical of the Stampeders come this time of the year. Mike, dare I say, could we see an upset here? Could the Bombers go into McMahon and leave with the West crown and go to the Grey Cup?
I think they have a shot. Calgary has not looked tremendous down the stretch. They have had a lot of injuries to their receiving core. You know, that sounds familiar. I know they have some tremendous talent. You know, you're bringing a guy like Chris Matthews, and they got Pecari Grant now, and Eric Rogers is still there. But listen, the offense has been struggling for the Calgary Stampeders lately. Their defense hasn't been as great as they were earlier in the season. I think that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have a serious shot in this one. Call me crazy.
I won't call you crazy. I think the Bombers can win this too. I've said for most of the season, I think Winnipeg is the most talented team top to bottom in the CFL. And a lot of people scoffed at that when they hit that four-game swoon mid-season-ish, a little later than mid-season, around that, like, you know, 10-12 game mark. They hit that swoon where they lost four in a row, and everyone was like, oh, yeah, best team in the league or most talented team in the league. They're not even going to make the playoffs. And then they righted their ship, and they won all those games in the regular season, only losing to Edmonton in the last game of the year, which was a meaningless game for them, that they still nearly won when they brought Andrew Harris came out of the game. Matt Nichols didn't play. Like, it was a game where the Bombers could have won that game. If it meant something, the Bombers probably would have won that game, to be perfectly honest. Yes. They are hot right now. Like, they are – like, they didn't look great against Saskatchewan, but that Saskatchewan defense is really good. Weather was a factor in that one. They got the monkey off their back. Nichols gets his first playoff win. O'Shea gets his first playoff win. Like, now they're playing with house money. We're going to make these picks in a couple of minutes here. You got to talk me out of taking the Bombers, Mike, because I really do think that they can win this one.
And then you add into the factor of the, you know, some of the creative play calling by Paul Appelese. You know, you never know when Mike O'Shea is going to throw, you know, a fake punt or whatever. They, you know, they have a lot of trick plays in their arsenal. And you know, this is the time of year to throw those in there because, you know, it's win or go home. So, you know, I don't think I'm going to try to convince you to pick the Stampeders because I'm leaning one way as well.
All right. You ready to make these picks then for these two games?
Yeah. Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's start with let's save the Ticats Red Black game for last. Let's start in the West. Who is emerging as the West Division champions and going on to Edmonton to play for the Grey Cup next Sunday?
I'm going with the Bombers. I think that Calgary is a tremendous team. They've done good things, especially on defense all season long. Their offense, you know, you look at their numbers and it's pretty good, but I don't know why it just doesn't pass the sniff test with me. I watch this team play. I think they're bland. I think they're boring. Their offense doesn't get me excited, and that doesn't matter. You know, who cares if I think the team is exciting? All that matters to them and their fans is if they win, right? It doesn't matter to me if Hamilton wins the Grey Cup and someone says they're boring. I don't give a crap, but that's just how I feel. I think the offense hasn't been as good as it's been in the past for the Stampeders, and I've seen some holes in the defense, and that's why I'm picking the Winnipeg Blue Bombers to win this West Final.
I got to pick the Stamps. Oh, I hate myself for saying that, but this is the first year Calgary has faced adversity late in the season. They didn't wrap everything up. They lost a bunch of games late. They had to play. Look, this is probably the first time in, 5 years that they've actually had to play this late in the season. Like, they had to win in the last game of the season, or they would have been playing the Bombers this past weekend. So, yeah, like, look, I am not going to be shocked one way. If the Bombers come out of this game with a victory, it's not going to surprise me at all. But I do think only one road team is going to win this week, so I'm taking the Stamps. Now let's go to the East, Mike. Ticats, Red Blacks. I think I just tipped my hand at who I'm picking in this one. Who do you like?
Listen, I like the Ticats, okay? I know they're the road team. I know they're going to be dogs. I just think that – and I
get it. You don't want to get excited, right? You don't
I pause to say the Ticats are going to win because we've seen this team play amazing 1 week. And then the next week it kind of falls off.
Yep.
So I don't want to get too high, but I still think that the Ticats are going to win this game. I hope with all of my heart that they win this game, even more than any other year, because we're going to be at the Grey Cup. I just want to see them play so badly live. I've never seen the Ticats play live in a Grey Cup. So I'm going to go with the Ticats. I think their offense showed that they can perform at a high level, even without all those star receivers. The offensive line is intact. All their starters are going to be playing, as far as I know. The defense was amazing last week. I think they're going to be, you know, pumped up. I think they're going to want to avenge all those losses in the regular season. It's hard to beat a team three times, let alone four times in a row in a season. So for all those reasons, I'm going with the Tiger Cats.
So I'm with you. The thing that gives me pause, and I am picking the Cats in this one because I just couldn't pick the Red Blacks. Come on. I hate the Red Blacks, right? Like, how could
yes,
I pick them?
You do. You really do.
But the thing that gives me pause is the thing that you started with. We've seen this team look absolutely tremendous one week and then look like they couldn't beat a peewee football team the next. That's the only thing that when I look at this game, that's what scares me. And I wonder if that's just our innate Ticat fandom, because we never expect this team. Like, even when they're good, they're 10-8. You know what I mean? Like, they're never the team. You know what I mean? Like, they're not. Yeah. Calgary went 13-5 this year. This was like the 10th year in a row that they had won 10 plus games or something ridiculous like that. We don't get that in Hamilton. We're 8-10. Yeah, okay, that
never.
Sucks. But they get in the playoffs, so let's do it. They've never won 13 games in the season. Their best record is 12-7-1. 12 wins is the best this team has ever had. Calgary's won 13 plus the last like 5 years. Like, it's ridiculous. They finished second in the West 1 year and they won 14 games. Hamilton has never done that. So
12-7-1. Those numbers don't add up, Josh.
Oh yeah, 12-5-1. My bad. Yeah,
there you
yeah,
go.
12-5-1. Yeah, I can do there math. I know how to count to 18. But the thing here's the thing. I think this is destiny, and I know this sounds lame, but what's the one thing you and I have always talked about when it comes to going to Grey Cups? We're a curse, and what's the curse? We're cursed with seeing the Argos win. Almost every
yes.
Grey Cup we've gone to, we've watched an Argonauts victory. So two negatives make a positive, Mike, and our two negatives will cross paths and be at the same Grey Cup, not only in the same building, but side by side. And we'll be side by side, and those two negatives that always, if one of us is there, always leads to an Argo victory, will lead to a Ticats appearance at least. And I know it's silly, I know it has nothing to do with the game, but I feel like you and I going to this game is the universe saying, you know what, we're going to throw you to a bone because we deserve it. It's been almost 20 years, man. 20
mm-hmm.
years. We watched them lose
yeah.
Grey Cups a couple years ago, like humiliatingly against Saskatchewan, a tight, tough one against the Stampeders. I just feel like the world is going to give us this. The universe is going to bless us with seeing our Ticats play in the Grey Cup in person. Whether they win or not is a whole other kettle of fish. But
just get there and we have a shot, you know.
Just
get
there,
get in the game, and you know, if we're not playing the Stampeders, I think we have a shot because you know, we've had a tough time against the Stampeders. But
they almost beat them in the last Grey Cup they played.
That's true. That's true. But that was like 70 years ago.
Yeah.
And the one thing that worries me too, if they do make it, then they play the Bombers and they have the longest drought in the league for championships. But listen, just get there.
Just get there.
We have a shot. I think you're right. Also, I think that this team is going to remember the year in Guelph. You know, they battled through all that adversity. They
yep.
made it to the Grey Cup. You know, they've battled so much adversity this season with injuries. I know every team goes through it, but it seems like they got hit the hardest out of everyone this year. I think this locker room is a very tight-knit group. You know, I have no proof of that. I just have a feeling about it. And I think they're going to come out strong against the Ottawa Redblacks. And I think it's going to be a tight game. It's not going to be easy, but the Ticats hopefully will prevail at the end of four quarters.
That Guelph year, getting to the Grey Cup was the reward. You know what I mean? Like being a Ticats
yeah.
fan and then finally getting back to the Grey Cup and winning a home playoff game in Guelph of all places. And then beating the Argos, the defending champs, to get to the Grey Cup. Like that to me... Like that, like them getting blown out by the Riders that year was almost like a foregone conclusion. Like once Saskatchewan beat Calgary in the West Final that year, I wrote off the Grey Cup. I was like, there's no way Hamilton's going to win. But you know what? We had them. We got that moment where they went into Toronto and they got back to the Grey Cup, and that was to me, that's the exciting thing. I'm not happy with just getting to the playoffs this year. I'm not happy with just winning one playoff game. I won't even be happy. Like, I will believe they can win the Grey Cup. I won't be happy just getting to the Grey Cup. They need to win a Grey Cup. I don't know. It just feels like everything – there's no reason why we should think that Ticats should win this game, and that's usually when they do win. You know what I mean? Like, when we don't – like, yes, they blew out BC, and we're all skeptical, and we're letting our Ticats-ness take over. Mm-hmm. Look, we're Ticats fans. If you want to just dismiss us as homers, go right ahead. I think they can. I think they will. I think you and I will be sitting in Edmonton watching our team try to win the first Grey Cup since 99. I just got to believe, man. I'm not usually this optimistic about the team, and maybe in my heart of hearts, I don't believe they can win, but I'm not going to say that out loud, man. I'm not going to let that negativity fester. I'm not going to be you with expansion. This is going to be positivity only. Go Cats, go. I think they got this one.
Yep. I think everything's going to, you know, they're going to lay out a really good game plan. June Jones is going to bring his A game. You know, Jerry Glanville is going to get this defense hyped up. And we're going to play some ball on Sunday. We're not going to lay down, that's for sure.
It's going to be a fun Sunday of football. Three CFL games left to go. Two this Sunday, one the Sunday after. Season came and went really quickly, but our Ticats are still playing, and hopefully they got one more in them after this one.
Fingers crossed, buddy.
All right, so that was Podski Wee Wee for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw. Beat the Red Blacks or the Slapdicks.
Yeah, definitely the Slapdicks. Eat 'em raw.
Yeah.
Woo!